when it is stated in the above that the Christ, the first of the aeons, the Son of God himself, descended on Jesus in the form of a dove to inhabit his mind and direct his actions during the allotted period of his ministry. What this means is that the historical man Jesus was not himself the Son of God, but became at one with the Son of God, which is portrayed as the Logos, and that all of mankind, as the offspring of God, has this same ability and ultimate destiny to accomplish what our older brother Jesus did. The Encyclopedia Britannica writes of the word Logos, in Greek philosophy and theology, the divine reason implicit in the cosmos, ordering it and giving it form and meaning. Though the concept defined by the term Logos is found in Greek, Indian, Egyptian, and Persian philosophical and theological systems, the idea of the Logos in Greek thought harks back at least to the 16th century BC philosopher Heraclitus, who discerned in the cosmic process a Logos analogous to the reasoning power in man. Later, the Stoics, philosophers who followed the teachings of the thinker Zeno of Citium, 430 BC, defined the Logos as an active rational and spiritual principle that permeated all reality. Philo of Alexandria, a 1st century AD Jewish philosopher, taught that the Logos was the intermediary between God and the cosmos, being both the agent of creation and the agent through which the human mind can apprehend and comprehend God. According to Philo and the Middle Platonists, philosophers who interpreted in religious terms the teachings of the 4th century BC Greek master philosopher Plato, the Logos was both immanent in the world and at the same time the transcendent divine mind. If we inquire where we can find the Logos, mind of God, which is portrayed in the doctrine of the Trinity as the Son of God, few people recognize the profoundly important statement by Clement of Alexandria when he wrote, thus in the Philebus, Plato, who had been the disciple of the barbarian philosophy, mystically called those atheists who destroy and pollute, as far as in them lies, the deity dwelling in them, that is, the Logos, by association with their vices. The message of Clement is threefold. Clement writes that the true source and inner revelation of the writings of Plato is the same Logos attested to in the Gospel of John. Moreover, we observe the continual statement that the Logos represents the deity that is equally indwelling within all of mankind. Clement then very much describes our own present-day condition when he refers to the multitude of people as atheists who destroy and pollute, as far as in them lies, the deity dwelling in them, that is, the Logos by association with their vices. And this necessary process of washing away the pollutions and refining our lower nature is presented in the statement, "Blessed are those who wash their robes, so that they may have the right to the tree of life, and that they may enter the city by the gates." Rev 22:14. The Logos exists at the core of each of our being, and as the lost prodigal sons, it is our riotous living and mindset which has caused us to fall under the control of what is portrayed as the citizen of the far country that is responsible for destroying and polluting, as far as in them lies, the deity dwelling in them, that is, the Logos by association with their vices. Their riotous living drains our bioenergy or life force off into nature and does not permit our bioenergy to be channeled within us in the development of mind. And it is therefore this riotous living and mindset that has robbed us of our spiritual inheritance. What this means is that if man is ignorant of God and cannot break through the inner barrier which permits him to receive the impressions of the Logos, mind of God, then this ignorance is the result of that person's lifestyle and mindset, the division of which has separated them from their inner core of being. The problem is that once the damage has been done in a person's life, it is difficult and requires much work on self to restore the purity and necessary framework of mind that would bring about success, enabling that person to communicate with the indwelling Logos. In the same way that it would be impossible to revive a fetus that was torn from its mother's womb, it is near impossible for a child who has been imbued with the mindset and the vices of our modern cultural lifestyle to then reverse and heal the damage that has been inflicted upon him, and restore within himself the necessary mental foundation and necessary lifestyle environment that enables the person to tap into the indwelling Logos. Thus, from our modern cultural perspective, those who escape the abortionists that tears the fetus from their mother's womb rarely ever escape the abortionist of our culture of ignorance that robs the child of the life of its soul. If there is factual truth to the above statement, that those who through their mindset and lifestyle destroy and pollute, as far as in them lies, the deity dwelling in them, that is, the Logos by association with their vices, the facts of life are presented by the Apostle Peter, who warns in a quotation in the homilies of his disciple Clement of Rome, that the Logos / Son of God / true prophet is within the mind of every one of us. But in those who have no desire of the knowledge of God and his righteousness, he is inoperative. But he works in those who seek after that which is profitable to their souls, and kindles in them the light of knowledge. Peter then warns the people, "Wherefore seek him first of all, and if you do not find him, expect not that you shall learn anything from any other." It can be stated that mankind dwells in a state of abject ignorance, because he does not understand the above words, that is, that there is only one source of knowledge, and all who destroy and pollute, as far as in them lies, the deity dwelling in them, that is, the Logos by association with their vices, remain shackled by their own self-imposed ignorance, which the Gospels portray as the outer darkness of mind and being. See outer darkness. As a culture, we are taught by teachers and professors whose mindset and lifestyle is self-destructive and has alienated them from the indwelling Logos, mind of God. We flock to religious institutions and listen to clergy who have been totally alienated from the true source of spiritual knowledge, because they cling to and promote the dogma and doctrines of carnal men. And because we fail to understand the very pattern of mind, we remain mentally flatlined and spiritually disenfranchised. To accomplish what the historical man Jesus did and fulfill our own destiny, we must ourselves evolve through four stages of the birth processes, wherein each womb environment is necessary to both evolve us and prepare us to bring about the next subsequent stage of birth. Holographically, when you emerged out of the womb of your mother, you entered the cosmic womb of Mother Earth, see mental womb, and it is in this world that is a mental womb, wherein you are striving to enter the kingdom of man. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that a fetus is not a person, and to some degree the ruling portrays the plight of the vast majority of the people of this world. Quoting from the foregoing link, in the same way that the fetus has an undeveloped human body that is in the process of physically developing in accord with the laws of nature, when we are born into this world, we dwell in a mentally infantile condition that through the interaction of the natural laws, we have the potential to bring about the next stage of birth, that is. Jesus answered him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, unless one is born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God." See mental womb, where the formation of our physical body can be portrayed as a cookie-cutter process. This would not be true with respect to the process of mental development. Why? Because the development of mind requires choice, free will, and the living out of the choices we have made in order to learn through our experiences. Therefore, there can be no cookie-cutter interaction with the natural laws that bring about the next stage of birth. While the laws of nature can provide a physical body for the soul to inhabit, the development of mind requires a very different and complex interaction of the natural laws in order to respond to our choices, exercise of free will, and the mindset and lifestyle we have chosen to live out. Just because we are born in the image of man, that does not mean that we have attained the kingdom of man. And this is seen in the statement in Genesis, "Then God said, let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground," Gen 1:26, which is followed by, "So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God he created them. Male and female he created them," Gen 1:27. While it is true that we were created in the image of Creator God, what is portrayed in the term likeness is a higher reality that must be achieved. From a holographic perspective, where each level maintains the pattern of the macrocosm within each aspect of the microcosm. In the same way that our physical body began when the sperm and ovum joined into an embryo in our mother's womb, it can be said that each man and woman is born into this realm as a cosmic ovum or sperm. See the cosmic ovum and sperm. And because this present womb is necessary to develop our mental facilities, we find ourselves immersed in an environment where all that we perceive and interact with in the outer world is in reality aspects of mind impressed into the allegorical forms of nature. See thought animated symbols. Which means that not only are you observing and interacting within the polarities of male or female paradoxical opposites, and it is through the interaction of male and female opposites that the third force of mind is evolved through the experiences of this three-dimensional realm that can rightly be portrayed as God's schoolhouse for his divine offspring. In the same way that the physical body is formed through the interaction of male and female genetic essences of sperm and ovum, the mind of man evolves through the interaction of male and female mental opposites on every level of his being. Which means that every aspect of each person's life is an aspect of mind impressed into an allegorical mental form that is presented to each person as a choice and opportunity to exercise one's free will and development towards the goal of achieving the next stage of birth, that is, soul birth. In accord with the foregoing, what this means is that all the causal factors of all that we observe in this physical world is all the expression of mind impressed into the forms of nature and therefore all the experiences of the life we are presently living. All the actions and events that mankind is immersed in, the countless conflicts and resolutions, all present to us the interaction of active positive male and reactive reflective negative female opposite polarities of mind being played out as catalysts to stimulate mental growth and development in the individual who is consciously aware of what they are perceiving, understanding that what they see in their perceptive vision and understanding is taking place within their own mind, which can be expressed in the words. Jesus said, "Recognize what is in your sight, and that which is hidden from you will become plain to you." Gospel of Thomas. The law is that every action not only moves in the direction intended, but also initiates an opposite reaction, and what is known as the law of octaves ensures that the two forces come together in the third force interval, C. When it is understood that in the divine pattern of creation, that the active/positive principle is an integral part of, and the other half of the reflective/negative principle, that being half of each other, they must return to the center balance. Some people refer this equation of the natural laws as the law of karma, often expressed in the words, "What goes around, comes around," and especially in the words, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." Gal 6, 7 in KJ. When rightly understood, Jesus warned in the Sermon on the Mount that, "Do not judge, or you will be judged. For with the same judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you." Matt 7. 1-2. And it is this natural laws that brings not only our judgments, but also our actions back upon us. See YouTube, the Esoteric Sermon on the Mount. And whoever forces a person to submit will in like manner be forced to submit. If anyone has an ear, let him hear. He who leads into captivity shall go into captivity. Rev 13, 9-10 NKJ. And this equation of the natural laws, which was understood by Pythagoras, Valentinus, Giordano Bruno, Gurdjieff, and taught by Jesus, is the very framework of how all of creation is evolving from the alpha of abject ignorance to the omega of enlightened light. And this equation is the very basis of the Trinity that the Church of Constantine corrupted and plundered the Christian world into the abyss of spiritual ignorance. In the same way that an embryo evolves into a fetus, and the fetus must be nourished by physical food in this mental womb, the mind must be nourished by thoughts and impressions that stimulate mental growth and development. And herein lies the crux of the problem. In the same way that all things exist within the spectrum of the divine pattern of male/female and the third force balance of mind, the mind itself can only be developed, expanded, and deepened when the male and female opposites are equally present and represented in the third force balance of the thoughts and impressions that are necessary to nourish the mind. The cause of gender violence. With this in mind, that is, it is important to understand that what we observe in the outer world has its source and causal factors within the mind of mankind, but with respect to that which may be categorized as gender violence, there is also another important element to the equation. Therefore, let me present a different perspective on the recent Me Too movement, quoting the Wikipedia. Me Too, or #MeToo, with local alternatives in other languages spread virally as a two-word hashtag used on social media in October 2017 to denounce sexual assault and harassment in the wake of sexual misconduct allegations against Harvey Weinstein. The phrase, long used in this sense by social activist Tarana Burke, was popularized by actress Alyssa Milano, who encouraged women to tweet it to publicize experiences to demonstrate the widespread nature of misogynistic behavior. Since then, the phrase has been posted online millions of times, often with an accompanying personal story of sexual harassment or assault. The question is often raised as to what can be done about gender violence. But to even begin to answer this question, we must first understand the causal factor in the mind, which begins with the reason why women are physically weaker than men. And while this question will most likely seem absurd to the vast majority of people who are not accustomed to perceptive wholeness in their understanding, there is not only an important reason why women are physically weaker, but the reason is founded upon the pattern and blueprint of human consciousness and the natural laws that are responsible for the reality of male aggression of women that is physically observed in this world. The problem is that we are not accustomed to thinking in terms that there is a causal factor in all events and realities that we observe in this world. The events of life don't happen in a vacuum, and in the same way that there is a mental reason why women are physically weaker and often the victims of gender violence, there is also an important reason why women are sexually objectified and in the base levels of lower earthly human consciousness, perceived primarily as sexual objects by a very large segment of the male population. In like manner, there is an important psychological and spiritual reason why women put themselves out as sexual objects, are consumed with their sexual image and attraction, are often seen as peddling their sexuality as a commodity, and even place themselves in a vulnerable position where they are easily made victims. While it has been said that men have a sexual thought every 20 seconds in the case of many women, they are totally consumed with their image and appearance, which of course has its roots in feminine sexuality. When rightly understood from a holographic perspective, the cause of much of the gender violence in the outer world is a projection of the internal strife between the male, linear/logic and feminine, intuitive spheres of mind, and the expression of this inward strife and conflict is then externalized in the domination, sexualization, and abuse of women who are the embodiment of intuitive thinking abilities. From the perspective of the tree of duality as patterned in the outer divided columns of the tree of life, the male, positive/active spheres of mind strive to dominate and even consume and nullify the feminine, negative/reflective intuitive insights, and once cognizant of this suppression of the feminine/intuitive. This suppression can be observed in virtually every intellectual exchange. But understanding the causal factor is very difficult in a world that does not at all understand the nature and reality of the intuitive spheres of mind, their unique powers and abilities that are contrary and often paradoxically opposite to the male linear spheres of mind, or even the purpose and existence of what can be portrayed as the spheres of domination within the mind of mankind that must be evolved and made whole in order to overcome and prevail over man's base and animalistic lower nature, which means that we can't overcome the physical domination and abuse of the feminine/intuitive until we first resolve the issue in the causal factors of mind and spirit. The harsh reality that is easily observed is that in the same way that the male half of humanity has the power and ability to totally control and even dominate the female half in this world, this total domination is merely an outward expression of an inner reality of mind. In the same way that male domination and the sexual objectification and what can constitute the abuse of women has its primary roots in the blueprint of mind, its mental expression in the physical is embedded in our various cultures. And if we want to change it, then we must begin by perceiving and understanding the male and female relationship in its core reality of mind and spirit. The predominant portrayal of women in our culture is personified as sexual, including the sexual objectification of the female physical form and image, the nurturing of children, and as a companion in the family environment. And this abject ignorance and the sexualization of the feminine is ingrained in every aspect of the world's culture. Both young boys and girls are clueless as to the true purpose of their gender roles, or their potential beyond that of sexual satisfaction, procreation, or emotional companionship. Moreover, since young boys have no immediate interest in family or child rearing, young boys are looking at girls primarily as a sexual outlet, Our culture has rejected all traditional values and has ushered in the age of what can rightly be portrayed as sexual recreation. And if, as a result of sexual intercourse, the girl becomes pregnant, this is often resolved by abortion, as the physically weaker sex. Young boys are taught by their peers that when a woman says no, she can either be coerced into relenting to his advances, or even physically overcome.
Further,
many males are of the opinion that when a female initially says no, that she really wants to be seduced into relenting to sex. We have all heard the stories where a group of young boys will gang rape a young girl or woman. Young boys keep lists of young girls who will put out so they can be dated for a sure thing. Date rape is a reality that every young woman must come to terms with, and if she is not forced or coerced into sex, she is often drugged. A recent survey found that 1,073 women, or 19.7%, reported experiencing an attempted or completed sexual assault since entering college. Researchers noted that the majority of all sexual assaults involved oral, vaginal, or anal penetration, and thus met the legal definition of rape in most states. Most young males don't even think of forced or coerced sex as rape and see it only a normal or typical part of the male/female sexual relationship. When a young girl says no, that is interpreted as she wants to be seduced. In the article, The History of Campus Sexual Assault, it is stated that 7.7% of male students volunteered anonymously that they had engaged in or attempted forced sex. Almost none considered it to be a crime. They would say, "Yes, I held a woman down to have sex with her against her consent, but that was definitely not rape." Koss says, part of the reason that few of her respondents considered themselves sexual offenders, she said, is that they faced no negative consequences, no accusation, no shame, no punishment. Compared with when she started doing this research in the 1980s, she says, even more men in current studies, around 11%, admit to being perpetrators. Male aggression is often an integral part of every aspect of our culture. Hollywood, politics, the business establishments, co-ed academia, and all the institutions where various creative ways are found to advance male aggression against women. And since many young girls are socially pressured to give in to male sexual aggression, and in many instances even afraid to cry rape, many women are easy victims of male sexual assault. But what our cultural and religious institutions fail to understand is the fact that this outward aggression and even enslavement against women has its beginning in the inward aggression and enslavement by the male linear/logic spheres of mind and their dominant power over the feminine intuitive spheres of mind, which aggression and enslavement is born out of man's own self-ignorance that inhibits his mental and spiritual development. Throughout the cultures of the world, men often overpower women with their superior strength, that is, enslaving them, raping them, drugging them, taking them captive, beating them into submission, dressing women in burqas, not permitting them to speak and act without their men's permission, denying them all education and advancement opportunities, and in some cultures where they are even considered the property of men, denying them equal protection or rights. In times of war and conflict, women are often portrayed as the spoils of war, that is, all the men are killed, and the women raped and slash were taken captive as sex slaves. Even today, there is a part of the female population that has been bought and sold as victims of human trafficking. And when attacked, only in rare instances does a woman possess the physical strength and ability to defend herself, much less actually prevail over a man. In Western cultures, while women have greater freedom, they are sexually objectified and cast into a sexual role in both their manner of dress and in the minds of most men. And even when the men permit women greater liberty and freedom, in most instances the women must both think in the manner that men demand they think, see the opening and unlocking of the mind, and act in the manner that men can use them in the fulfillment of their own appetites and needs. Our modern culture and electronic media has made sex a commodity where half-naked women must flaunt their wares and display themselves to attain stature and success in life. Women themselves have promoted their own sexual objectification and have remained silent, while men such as Harvey Weinstein forced young girls into sexual submission in order to get ahead. The ignorant anti-perception of women. In our modern spiritually disenfranchised culture, women are never personified as the opposite half of a man. Further, other than sex, child rearing, and a largely emotional relationship, the importance of woman is not at all understood in the mental and spiritual development of man. Men and women ignorantly portray themselves as whole, that is, a whole being, led by female misogynists who despise all that is feminine and portray themselves as feminists. Our culture often promotes the biological and spiritual lie that women are the same as men with the exception of their childbearing roles. And in the promotion, this lie of profound ignorance. Men and young boys are never told that the female gender are not only their opposite equal, but they are never told because of the feminine void within the male that inhibits their own mental development. Women are representative of the very means for men to advance themselves both mentally and spiritually. While there are cases where half a person's brain has been removed, and they then to some degree learn to adapt, but the unique abilities that are dominant in either the left or right hemisphere of the brain can't be fully accommodated in these cases where one of the halves of the brain has been removed. This is also true of the division of man and woman. By divine design, women possess different and often opposite abilities to men, with the problem being that while the male linear attributes are often celebrated, the female intuitive abilities are portrayed as nonsensical and of little value. The problem is that by design, it is the interaction of the male predominantly linear and feminine predominantly intuitive spheres of mind that is necessary to overcome organic human mental and spiritual limitations. When you divide something in half and each half retains certain important abilities which are necessary to both complete and have the capacity to raise up the opposite half, then it is important to bring the two halves together to interact. And only through this interaction of male and female opposites can the process of evolved expansion and deepening of mind and consciousness be brought about. And what this means is that without woman, men will remain mentally flatlined and spiritually impotent. Thus, the feminine intuitive is absolutely necessary for the development of the male linear spheres of mind, and because the linear always attempts to control and suppress the intuitive, it is necessary for the separation of the gender opposites in order to bring about the development of mind and spiritual evolution of the soul. In many respects, it can be factually stated that the interaction of the opposites in the form of the insatiable appetite and necessity of sex is the catalyst to bring about the development of mind and consciousness in achieving a higher plane of wholeness and completion. And it is academia's ignorance of this fact, the celibacy or misuse of sex by many religious paths, and the promotion of unrestrained recreational sex by our modern culture, that is responsible for the mental and spiritual stagnation that chains mankind to the abyss of abject ignorance of self and the higher purpose and realities of life. Einstein wrote, "The intuitive mind is a sacred gift and the rational mind is a faithful servant. We have created a society that honors the servant and has forgotten the gift." And what the enlightened visionary has warned is that because man's religious, philosophical, cultural, and educational institutions have created a society that honors the rational servant and has forgotten and suppressed the development of the intuitive gift, thus blinding mankind to the underlying causal factors of all that man sees and experiences in this world, man remains perpetually lost, blind, and bound with shackles of ignorance. Because man and woman are divided halves, the linear mind of most men perceive a different and incomplete reality that is very different than the intuitive perceptive understanding of many women. While the linear-minded person only sees what is visually perceived with man's physical senses, dependent upon a woman's natural intuitive perception, she is more able to perceive the causal factors that are responsible for creating the events and experiences in the life we all are living. Modern physicists have already proven that what man sees with his natural senses is a shadow image of events that are generated in an unseen source realm. See the true facts and realities of life. Where the linear mind possesses superior strategic abilities, it is the intuitive mind that is able to perceptively observe the causal factors that have transpired in the unseen source realm. And only when the strategic perception of the linear and the causal factors of the intuitive are brought together can conscious high-level perceptive solutions be brought about. As an example, among many of the Iroquois Native American tribes, Only the men who attended the Inner Council could vote, but before they could vote, they were required to discuss and come to a consensus with their wives. Thus, the one vote could only be cast when both halves of the wholeness equation had provided their specific input, and a consensus was achieved through wholeness. This is one of the many important lessons that the Europeans failed to learn when they came to the American continent. The idea that men and women perceived differently because of their inherent polarities of body and mind will be immediately rejected as absurd by all facets of our modern culture, that is, religious, academic, philosophic, and cultural, and it is the failure of restoring wholeness in an evolved state of mind and consciousness that is responsible for all the suffering and ignorance in the world, and has alienated mankind from his own true source of being. When Dr. Larry Summers made the statement that perhaps women are attracted to different intellectual and occupational pursuits than men, he was drummed out of his position as president of Harvard University. Quoting from The Guardian, Dr. Summers argued that boys outperform girls on high school science and math scores because of genetic difference. Research in behavioral genetics is showing that things people previously attributed to socialization weren't due to socialization after all. And for making such a statement, Dr. Summers was driven out of his position at Harvard. Thus, if you stood before the halls of academia and made the statement that the feminine, intuitive spheres of mind, which our modern educational institutions not only reject, but refuse to even acknowledge, are the means for man to gain greater insight and learn the truth of all truths, and that the common reliance upon linear book knowledge and the authorities and teachers of this world inhibits man's ability to gain access to higher knowledge and understanding, you would find yourself immediately rejected. In accord with their linear mindset, this would make absolutely no sense to their manner of thinking. In the same way that the halls of academia rejected the statement that men and women perceive and interact in the world differently, the very teaching of the Apostle Peter on scripture interpretation has been suppressed and rejected by the church. The most profound statement was made by the Apostle Peter as recorded in the homilies of his disciple Clement, where Peter warns those who attempt to read the scriptures literally. Therefore, great care is to be taken that when the law of God is read, it be not read according to the understanding of our own mind. For there are many sayings in the divine scriptures which can be drawn to that sense which everyone has preconceived for himself. And this ought not to be done. For you ought not to seek a foreign and extraneous sense, which you have brought from without. Why should the scriptures not be read according to the understanding of our own mind, and not understood in accord with an extraneous sense, which you have brought from without? Because the mind of man attempts to interpret them in a literal historical sense, which totally defeats the very purpose of the scriptures. That the scriptures are not at all historical accounts, but rather events of the seeker's own mind and consciousness that has been set forth under an allegorical facade, prompted the church father Origen to write that the scripture contains an unhistorical element inwoven with the history, in order that the worthlessness of the latter may drive us to seek the spiritual meaning. Origen quoted under Origen Adamdius, the Encyclopedia of Religion and Ethics. Sincere believers must therefore turn from the understanding of the flesh, or in the words of the apostle, for to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace. Rom 8:6 KJV. The religion of Messiah/Christ was one of the spirit, and Paul taught the Gentile believers not to look to the historical man Jesus, but rather the indwelling spiritual living Messiah/Christ as their savior and revealer of truth. Therefore, from now on we recognize no man according to the flesh, even though we have known Christ according to the flesh. Yet now we know him thus no longer. 2 Cor 5:16 NAS.